Invaluable intelligence, short and sweet. eMarketer's Chart of the Day newsletter delivers one insightful chart each day to help you better understand trends across marketing, media, advertising, commerce, technology, finance, too much, if anything. Each edition also includes suggestions on how you can use these charts in presentations and pitch decks. Visit insiderintelligence.com/chart of the day and sign up today. Link, of course, is in the show notes. Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen, an eMarketer podcast. This is the Friday show that thinks Susie needs to pull herself together. Susie, you're all over the map.
How is it just me?
We're all pretty messy. This has been a mess.
Apart from Yuri, this is the show that feels as though Yuri wouldn't mind being somewhere else. Literally anywhere else.
Yuri's
anyway,
winning.
I'm your host, Marcus Johnson, who's also reluctantly here in today's show. Humane's wearable pin is here, but can it replace the smartphone? Maybe. Are bricks and mortar going anywhere? Is Laps the next big social media app? Do people want to shop on Amazon from their social media feeds? How news consumption on social media is changing? And which airlines carry the most passengers in the world? Join me for this episode. We have three people. Let's meet them. We start with our Vice President of Content, who heads up our retail and e-commerce team based in New York, Ms. Susie David Canyon.
Hi, thanks for having me and for filming in the studio at the office. It's so exciting.
I would say it's a pleasure to have you, but that's not entirely true. It's been a rough start, folks.
We've been trying
to start this episode for about a year. We're also joined by our principal analyst who covers everything technology. We call him Yuri Wamser.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, everyone.
There he is, based in New Jersey. And finally, we have with us one of our senior analysts who is typically hanging out in Philadelphia, but he is currently in our New York studio with Susie recording this episode. He is on our digital advertising and media team. It's Max Willens.
Yo.
Bang. There he is.
Feels a little sillier doing it in this environment, but here we are.
Just as silly as normal.
Touche.
What do you have in store for you? Well, we start with the story of the week. We're talking about Humane's wearable AI pin. What does that look like? How good is it? We then move to the game of the week, where our contestants will go head-to-head to try to give us the best takeaways they can from each of the four stories we have to try to win the championship belt. And we end with some random trivia. We refer to that segment as dinner party data. But we start, of course, the story of the week. Humane's wearable pin is here, but can it replace the smartphone? Computing company Humane has officially and efficiently, they've launched its AI pin, an open AI-powered wearable. This was noted by David Pierce of The Verge. The device, developed by a married couple who were former Apple employees, is a $700 2-inch square, and it's about 40 grams, and it's a magnetic pin, no screen, and it sits on your chest like a Star Trek badge, says Aaron Tilley of the Journal. Good comp. It comes in two parts, a square device and a battery pack that magnetically attaches to your clothes. You control it using your voice. It's got a 13-megapixel camera. You use hand gestures to control it as well, and there's a small built-in laser projector that displays information on the user's palm. Users will also have to pay $24 a month for a Humane subscription, which gets you a phone number and data through T-Mobile. The device ships early 2024, but pre-orders have already begun. What can it do? Well, it's not always on, just to let folks know. You have to touch the device to wake it. But when you do touch it to wake it up, it can do a number of things. Its main use is to access an AI assistant that uses ChatGPT to conversationally ask it questions. Think a search engine. It can remember past queries as well and notes to self. Voice-based messaging and calling. You can say, catch me up, and there's a feature there that summarizes your email inbox for you. You can get nutritional information by holding up the camera to a piece of food. And there's also real-time translation, playing music, all kinds of stuff. Yuri, you cover tech for us. I've got to start with you. What do you make of this new device from Humane, this new AI pin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really cool device. I think the technology is really interesting. It's a reimagination of, you know, a mobile device. So I think that they're consciously not trying to replace the smartphone, but more kind of complement it. It is one of several devices out there right now, or a couple of devices that are trying to imagine how mobile will get changed with generative AI. So you have Meta's Ray-Ban Stories smart glasses, that also connect to Meta AI. They are using voice to interact basically with the virtual assistant. Humane's Pin is doing the exact same thing. It's basically a way to screenlessly interact with AI. To me, it's almost a concept device. I don't think it's going to sell a lot. It's too expensive. I think it has limited utility, but it has a kind of ton of cool features that will probably end up in other devices down the line. So I'm super fascinated by it. Can't wait to get my hands on one, but I don't think it's going to be a big seller.
Interesting. So you think the price is the main thing holding it back?
I think price and utility. It doesn't really do anything that a smartphone can't do. It just does it in a new way.
Interesting.
So I think some of those user interfaces might come into handy down the line, but I don't think it is, you know, as being transformant enough for what it can offer that a lot of people will buy it.
Right. Susie?
No, I was just going to say, I'm definitely not an early adopter and I don't have a gigantic budget, but I also didn't understand how this works, right? It's a pin. Am I going to keep touching my sweater to figure out how to make it work? And then it's like tied to T-Mobile. I have to pay a monthly fee. I also have to pay $700 for the gadget itself. That isn't that small, even though they're saying it's small from the pictures. It didn't look like it was not like an invisible gadget, like none of that. I think they just slapped on AI and tried to pretend like it was going to be Google Home on my body. And by the way, the name is kind of weird, right? Humane.
Well, they call it the pin, right?
But like the company name is Humane, like human-ish, sort of like a humane, right? Or am I making that up?
No, I mean, I think the idea is that like it may
human-ish
affords
was
you.
Taken.
Right. So, it's a kind
sorry,
of a
Max,
weird name.
No, I mean, I think the points you guys both made are right, but like I also feel, I think Yuri's point about it being kind of a prototype is right. But, you know, to the price point, like, you know, an iPhone costs $1,200. If they can get a deal with a wireless carrier where you can finance them and you're just, you know, essentially paying like $20 a month for your pin in the background, people are going to be fine with it. When we talked about this the first time on the show, I was one of the guests, and what I said then is what I feel now, which is that I feel like there's certain contingents of people for whom this is going to be very appealing. One are people who kind of hate how much time they spend thumbing through their phones, and the other is affluent parents who want to give their children kind of digital connectivity without giving them screen access. So I think the thing that's going to really determine whether this thing sinks or swims, though, is the extent to which it can kind of build an ecosystem of support functions. So, for example, if there's a way in which you could sort of have it give you turn-by-turn directions. So if you're just walking around, you go, hey, find me a coffee shop nearby and tell me how to get there. Right now, I don't think it's capable of doing that. But if it could get there in the near future, I think that would be pretty powerful.
Right. It's working on that, I believe. It says they're intending to work on navigation and shopping capabilities as well,
like,
and also planning to give developers ways to build their own tools.
How will that work? It's just going to give me directions out loud when I'm in the street and everybody's going to know I'm lost?
Well, you could potentially, you sync
Everyone
it with a Bluetooth device and, you know, it tells you that way. But I think that the point there really is like the extent to which it can build an app ecosystem, right? And I think the thing that is potentially going to hamper that is it's really hard to see a world in which you could incorporate advertising revenue into them. And so then you're really just left with a world where people are going to content themselves with, you know, spending $1 or $5 to add a capability. And I don't know if the economics of their work potentially.
Yeah.
So like, that's a question that I have.
I wonder if they add a headphone to it. So maybe you can throw a headphone in and speak to things that way. So you can talk to it, but then when it's replying to you, you just be able to hear it just yourself. Sorry, Yuri.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that one of the interesting things about it is it doesn't have apps. Like it, and I think that's one of the ways it's really pointed to where the future is going. I think with these virtual assistants, there'll be plugins to the virtual assistants that'll give you the information you need, but you're not actually going to an outside app to get what you need. And I think in that way, it's really path breaking. And I think you're going to see more like smartphone virtual assistants have that type of engagement as well.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of obtrusive, no? Like a pin on your person with then earbuds so that you can hear what it's telling you or you can communicate with it. And then there's no screen. So like you're just randomly touching the pin to activate it. I don't know.
Well, it has that cool light thing. You can project stuff onto your hand, which I think is an interesting form.
You're holding your hand like this to your chest? I don't know.
Or just down at your pocket. I don't know.
Oh, like you lean forward. Yeah. I just can't conceptualize it. And in retail, if it's too hard to use, nobody's going to do it. So that's where I stand.
Go on, Max.
No, I was just going to say it's not intuitive. It's definitely something that there's going to have to be a critical mass of like early adopter nerds just kind of trying it.
Yuri.
Hey, listen, if you get an
Susie,
hook me up. I'll play with one for.
Wait, did you want it to be you?
Well,
yes,
it is a different form factor. And anytime when the smartphone came out, a lot of people weren't ready to kind of pinch and swipe and scroll and use a device that no one was really used to. And then we got used to it. And I think this is such a different form factor. To Yuri's point, there are different folks trying to work on different types of form factor to replace the smartphone. And you could, when you want to just listen to it, you could put headphones in. The way it works, I believe, is the sound creates like a pocket of sound very close to your kind of neck shoulder area. So it's not projected. You can turn it up so it projects the sound, but I guess it's the idea is that it kind of whispers, like almost as though you had like a headphone and you put the headphone like not in your ear but close to your head, like you could hear it but you couldn't hear it, like not everyone else could hear it as well.
It's just so, I don't know if I'm going to put Yuri on the spot here, but how many people use a home smart device speaker, like what percentage? I feel like it's
quite high.
It's pretty high. Yeah, I mean, I don't have the exact percent, but it's what, 20-30%?
I think it's around a quarter of folks have a smart speaker.
That's not really high, right? Like if you think about it, that's
have a smart speaker at home. In terms of people who use Google Assistant, it's about 80 odd million.
On your
people
phone.
People who lose, Siri, Alexa, it's all around off the top of my head, 70 to 80 million range with Google up front.
Yeah, and for other assistants, it's more than that. I mean, it's like, I think it's around 150 million or something like that, so.
But so people are already using it on a device that they already have, right? So are they going to buy a pin?
That's my feeling. They won't. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you get them to use this different? So, I mean, I pose the question of, can it replace a smartphone? The thing is, Humane is not actually trying to replace a smartphone. They don't think that their device will. The founder was saying that. They think it will. They're hoping that it will. And they're probably saying that because they know people aren't going to want to replace their smartphone for this. Because it's almost too hard for people to think of getting rid of their smartphone. So they're hoping that it can live alongside this. And Erin Griffith of the New York Times was saying, Humane's AI pin meant to fade into the background of everyday lives. And it's supposed to get you in and out of interactions quickly. The goal is to kind of replicate the usefulness of the smartphone without any of the bits that make us all addicted, like the dopamine hit of dragging to refresh a social media feed, swiping to see a new video. The device is also designed to route your queries to the right tools. As Yuri was saying, you don't have to download any apps or manage any apps, which is pretty good. So it's trying to live alongside the smartphone, something that you can use to do smartphone-related tasks, but you have to pull your smartphone out, and can kind of, similar to the PC. The PC is not something that died because of the smartphone, but it's something that we use for certain types of activities when you want more real estate on the screen. But yeah, it's got some obstacles. The price, the subscription that comes with it, a new OS called Cosmos. So people getting used to that. You have to have a new phone number with the device as well, because it comes with its own wireless plan. So that's not ideal. But there is a world where version 2 of this, it does look a lot better. It does have navigation, does have shopping potentially. Ina Fried of Axios saying, if the device could access your email, documents, calendar, the device could really, help you out through life. You could ask it questions and not have to always look at your phone to figure out what time your flight is, or if it's on time, to see where the nearest coffee shop is, etc., and bring you more into the real world. Big hopes though for Humane. 100,000 pins are expecting to sell, hoping to sell in their first year. For context, Apple sold nearly four times as many iPods in the year after its 2001 launch. So we'll see.
I mean, iPods were a net new kind of thing, right? How many Google Glasses have been sold?
I think one.
Just putting everybody on the spot right now.
You have a pair.
Yep.
And then I think that's it, everyone. I think that's everyone. Just one. That's what we've got time for the story of the week. It's time now for the game of the week. Today's game. What's the point? I read out four stories. Yuri, Max, and Susie have to give us the main takeaway of the story. Okay answers get 1 point. Good answers will get you 2. And answers that give you the same feeling as when you finished your last exam and you realized you have the whole summer in front of you. You guys remember. Is that not a good one?
It's time.
I'm basking in the idea right now.
I feel like we should have summers off still. Stuart?
Yes.
Get on that. Answers to leave you with that feeling, you get your 3 points. You get 20 seconds to answer before you hear this. Yeah, don't you dare run long, otherwise you lose points. Repeat offenders, Susie, will be destroyed.
It's never me.
Most points wins. Let's start round one, and Yuri's first. Brick and mortar isn't going anywhere, right? Simon's property group, who own a ton of malls, had a very strong quarter, which is a sign not just of the strength of its portfolio, but also of the importance of brick and mortar as a retail channel, writes our Retail Briefings analyst Rachel Wolf. She says that whilst consumers may be as enthusiastic about in-person shopping as ever, their habits and expectations have changed significantly. But Yuri, brick and mortar retail not going anywhere, what's the point?
People still want to try on stuff. They still want to experience stores. I think that the way brick and mortar is evolving to become sort of a better experience, I think is what's going to, you know, make it thrive or keep it thriving, or actually make it thrive again.
Perfect. That's much better than what's about to happen. Susie, try your best.
Yeah, you know why? Because there is no point. I don't know why we keep having this conversation. Retail is a store's business. Even in our forecast, it's 80% of sales. What I do think is changing, though, is the composition of retail space. So I don't just mean in terms of like the experience in the store. I also mean there are only a certain number of malls that are like the A++ malls. There are but lots of other different types of retail space, like the strip malls, the streets downtown. Like there's just a different look and feel for retail stores, but stores will never be dead. We should stop even asking ourselves that question.
Max.
Yeah, I think the point Susie made is exactly right. I think what's interesting though about the sort of differentiation of the kinds of retail environments we have is that I think retailers are going to have to be careful, especially the ones occupied by big boxes, that they don't just turn into basically like fulfillment centers that you can, you know, that are also showrooms. There's something sort of depressing about walking around in, you know, a Target that's pretty empty and there's just like a kind of never-ending stream of people showing up to get stuff that someone has picked out for them or that they ordered on the internet. And so figuring out how to balance that is going to be really important. But to Susie's point, they're not going anywhere.
Hmm. Yeah, why do folks head to stores instead of shopping online, for clothes at least, to try on the product? 63% of folks saying that. Seeing the thing in real life, 59% of folks saying that. And because they want the thing quickly, 56% of folks saying that. This was research from Digital Commerce 360 and BizRate Insights survey from this past summer. Very nice, folks. Oh, and yeah, Susie, what you were saying, yeah, in-store retail still accounts for 84% of overall sales and 81% of holiday sales this year. So it's most sales. Right, let's move to round two. We start with Susie. Is Laps the next big social media app? Laps, a new photo app with the tagline friends, not followers, has entered the fray. Can it last? Questions Madison Malone Kirscher of the New York Times. She explains that Laps encourages folks to take photos and develop them, air quotes, in the app. So think of disposable cameras. When the pics are ready, several hours later, their takers can decide if they want to post them for their Laps friends or bank them for private viewing. Photos can be altered and, sorry, can't be altered. No, they can't. And there are no visible like counts. The app launched in 2021, actually, but just was re-released and has shot to number two in the US on the Apple App Store's free chart. Susie, is Laps the next big social media app? What's the point?
No, there's no point. Okay. That's it.
There's no point on this one either. Okay. Well, very negative to this segment.
I mean, really, honestly, if you're relaunching and you get to number two, but it took that long and you had to do this whole new buzz, is it really going to be the next new thing? But more importantly, I think it's trying to solve for a lot of problems in a way that they're like consumers aren't asking for it to be solved, like the likes and the reactions and the number of pictures that I have control over. So there's that angle of it. Is it really fixing a problem that exists? Plus, social platforms only work if there's both communication and they only work if there's like a component of communication and entertainment. And this one doesn't seem to be that. Plus, you need to get a huge network effect, right, for it to be the it platform. What I do think is very clever is that they're doing like you can only join if you're invited, and five people that you invite also join, right? So you don't actually just invite them, they have to join. So it might have a little bit more success in creating that network effect, but I think it's still too hard.
Hmm. Max.
Yeah, without the network effect, it's just a like a group chat curiosity. And I think that that's really going to hamstring them. The other issue here too is that without the scale and without the with the kind of friends and family only effect, you're really kind of putting an upper limit on the advertising upside. And what I think is interesting is that there's, you know, there's a version of this where, you know, maybe if this was like an app basically that everyone spent a dollar on or $3 on or had to spend like a dollar a year to keep going, that might be kind of an interesting thing. That, I mean, that kind of ARPU is like not sustainable for a social network. But I, to me, this is not, this does not have upside, long-term upside as a social platform because of the scale problems we've talked about already.
Hmm. Yuri.
Be a little more optimistic. I'm not sure if this
Thank goodness.
I'm not sure if this app is going to be a hit, but I think there's room for an app that's less complicated and something like it, you know, what Instagram's become or TikTok or any of the other existing social networks or social media. There's room for an app like that. That's why BeReal took off for a while. That's why this is taking off. So I don't know if it's going to stick, but I think there's room there.
All right, at the halfway mark, Max has 5, Susie has 4, Yuri has 3. That's mainly my fault because I didn't tell Yuri what we were actually doing on the episode. It's like Yuri kind of showing up to a basketball pickup game just as a hockey goalie. And I'm glad, yeah, I should have told you what sport we were playing. I'm sorry, Yuri. It's entirely my fault. But you're hanging in there. Stick with it. We've still got 2 more rounds to go. Round 3, we start with Max. Shopping Amazon from your social media feed. Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat users can now shop Amazon directly from their feeds. That's our briefings writer, Daniel Konstantinovich. The social platform's users will be able to buy select products directly from Amazon, all within their feeds. So Instagram users, for example, can see real-time pricing, Prime eligibility, estimated delivery times, and product details from within the ad of the thing in the app. Max, shopping Amazon from your social media feed, what the hell is the point?
I think the point is that someone at Amazon saw that viral tweet of that young person saying, I don't Google, I TikTok. And this is them just trying to sort of keep abreast of evolving consumer shopping and product search behaviors. I think that the thing that's going to sort of limit the effectiveness of this is the kinds of products that are available for sale there, right? I mean, all the products or a lot of the products that went viral for sale on TikTok were novel and strange and kind of off the wall in a way that maybe Amazon has those products for sale, but it's not what people think of Amazon for. They think of Amazon as a place that they can go and buy more diapers or a place to go buy more toothpaste or to, you know, buy some sneakers on Prime Day when they're heavily discounted. They don't think of it as a place to find cool, novel, weird stuff. And to the extent that they can kind of ensure that that's, you know, what is put on sale on the social platforms, that will maybe combat that a little bit. But I think this is more about just kind of trying to keep abreast of consumer changing search habits.
Hmm. Yuri.
Yeah, I basically agree with Max. I think the type of products are going to be not universally appealing. But what this partnership does do, it makes everything very seamless, not just the ordering, you know, to click one click, but also just the back end delivery. So I definitely think it's going to spur a lot of social commerce. I don't think it's going to be transformative, but it definitely will make a difference.
Hmm. Susie.
So I actually am very positive about this one. And I think it's very clever for both brands because they both needed help. Amazon, as you said, Max, is not a place for discovery, right? You go, you buy what you need and you move on. They've been trying to figure out how to become more discovery cool. They're not. So being tied to a Meta like Instagram or Facebook will help them with that component. Maybe not as cool as TikTok, but still in that component of cool factor. And then on the other end, we know that consumers have a tough time trusting social with their credit card details. And there's a lot of friction when it comes to buying online when you see something on Instagram. And for Instagram, for example, they have to hold on to the inventory and that's expensive for them, right? So I think it alleviates some of the friction and the ineffectiveness of social shopping on these platforms, and it helps Amazon be cooler. It's a win.
Very nice, folks. 2 points each for that round, which leaves the rankings currently in the same order. Max with 7 now, Susie with 6, Yuri with 5. But it's double points round 4. Of course it is. And so all to play
Yuri,
for.
Yuri, be ready. You're going
to
win.
Well, nothing to play for. One of the two. Max is up last. Susie second, Yuri, you're first. Round 4. How news consumption on social media is changing. Today, half of US adults get their news at least sometimes from social media. Half, according to some new Pew research. The social platform American adults are most likely to consume news on is Facebook. That's all adults. 30% do so. 26% do so on YouTube, 16% on Instagram, 14% on TikTok, and 12% of American adults consume news on X. Used to be called Twitter. But Yuri, how news consumption on social media is changing. What's the point?
It's making people rely on news sources that are less verified. So I mean, I think it's going to have a pretty big impact on, you know, our political culture, just that people are being informed that way. But we'll see. Mm-hmm.
Susie.
I do think that the idea, like Yuri was saying, is that more people are relying on unvetted sources of news is a bit scary.
I mean, yeah, it was 52% of people getting their news on social media, and now it's 50, and that in 2020 was an election year. And so maybe that's why people were a bit more tuned into the news. So yeah, it's interesting how it hasn't really moved over the last couple of years. You could put it down to kind of a rounding error in terms of when they did the study and what was going on in that particular year. Max, what's the point?
I actually think that there, I mean, the top line number not moving is notable, but I think what is notable is that if you look kind of at the individual networks, you see notable movements like Facebook and Facebook going down, but TikTok, Instagram, and Twitch all shot way up. And I think that that speaks to something that's really, really important, which is that those are all broadly platforms that are aimed at and rely on young people. And so the fact that there is an uptick in news on those platforms, because all those platforms, you know, rely on algorithms to sort of surface and distribute stuff, it shows that there is appetite for news among young people. It's, to Yuri's point, very worrisome that, you know, an awful lot of it is probably coming from, you know, either secondhand or unvetted sources. But I think that this is something that's very encouraging, especially when you think about the fact that Meta in particular is trying everything in its power to take news out of its experience and out of its product. So to me, the big takeaway is that there is appetite for news among Gen Z, even though we think of them as just whatever we think of them.
Choose your own adventure. I had a few takeaways from this, actually. I thought it was fascinating. And so the first one is, I mean, people who use X or Twitter for news, they didn't drop as much as I was expecting to.
They can't help themselves.
Giving the turmoil swirling around the company since Elon Musk took over, me and Max spoke about Twitter and X yesterday with Jasmine. And I was saying that a lot of people use it for news, and it'd be interesting to see how much that's dropped since he took over. People on Twitter use it for news the most versus people who are on Facebook who don't use it for news as much. And so it's the number one app in terms of most news consumed by its users. 53% of people are doing so. And that hasn't really moved at all in the last year, which I thought was quite interesting. TikTok now in joint second for news amongst its users, tied with Facebook, which is incredible because in the last 3 years, Facebook shares fallen from 54 to 42 in terms of people getting news from Facebook. And TikToks went from 22 to 42. So it's jumped massively. Facebook's come down and now they're neck and neck in second place for news consumption amongst its users. And then finally, very few older users use social networks for news. About 30 to 50% of people under the age of 50, about 30 to 50% use it for news, so a healthy amount. But over the age of 50, almost no one. Like, it's very, very small number of people using it. So a lot of discrepancies between platforms, between ages, I thought was quite interesting. All right, folks, that's what we've got time for the game of the week. Count the scores. It's very easy because they're very low. I'm not going to lie. Okay? Wasn't our best game, Susie?
Well.
Max is this week's winner of the game of the week.
Woo!
Congratulations to him. He crushed it. He didn't need to get many points to win, let's be honest. We'll play Max. It was like an AFC North battle. Low scoring, but hard-nosed.
My goodness.
You win the championship
belt. I don't
belt.
Know why we keep playing.
Does that make me the Cincinnati
Because you
Bengals?
Make me. You make me. You say, I'm only going to be on the show if it's a game. That's why
true.
We keep playing.
That's true.
There we go. Max, sorry, mate.
Does that make me the Cincinnati Bengals? Because that makes me upset. I don't really
Maybe the Steelers? You're Pennsylvania? No? Okay. I guess you're closer to Philly, but they're Pennsylvania.
I did for a time. I spent a lot of years torturing my wife and threatening to move our family to Pittsburgh, which she knew I wasn't going to do it.
She hasn't left you yet because of it?
Great. Well, if she's going to, it'll be over something else.
I'm kidding. Great town.
Yeah.
You get the last word.
Oh, well. Go Steelers. No, I don't know. I think the Pew thing is really, really interesting. But partly because I think that there's this, every year the Reuters Institute puts out this study about, you know, who's reading the news, who's consuming news. And there's this hand wringing about young people, you know, whether they care about news or whether people care about getting information. And I think that seeing these little glimmers that prove that people do actually care about getting information about what's going on around them is it's always heartening. So yeah. Even if it's got to be in a strange, scruffy format like short form video, you know, it's better than nothing.
It's also one of those things where you question the definition of news. You know, you could ask one person, yep, and they would say these sources, another person would say these sources, some more credible than others. Are you getting your news from just one individual who you think is giving you the news versus an established, credible, vetted institution? Similar to screen time. Screen time can vary depending on your interpretation of screen time, what you're doing on screen time, I should say, with that screen time. So yeah, it is really interesting. But I wonder if, because the definition could be changing, how much do we need to take that into account?
Yeah, I feel like that's very optimistic.
Who's that, me?
No, Max.
It's Max, out of character.
Yeah, it's a weird look for him. Yeah. Right? It's not really on brand for Max.
No.
What happened to you?
Sitting with me here in the same room.
Warm glow.
Yeah, that was
run. That's exactly what it is.
That's what we've got to dive for the game of the week. We move to dinner party data. This is the part of the show where we tell you about the most interesting thing we've learned this week. And we start with Max, because he won the game very easily.
I have data about alcohol consumption during Thanksgiving. You know, I feel like some people do think of Thanksgiving as being kind of a sloppy, sodden holiday, but it turns out it's not. The American Addiction Centers, they polled 1,000 U.S. adults about when they do all their drinking, and the thing that surprised me is that relative to all the other American holidays, Thanksgiving has the lowest share of people that binge drink of all the U.S. holidays. It will surprise none of you that Mardi Gras comes in first, New Year's Eve comes the second, but, you know, Labor Day came in higher, Memorial Day came in higher. Halloween, which, you know, at my ripe old age, doesn't apply to me anymore. But I remember, you know, getting pretty sloppy on Halloween when I was younger.
But of drinking younger. Age.
Yes.
Seven.
Yeah, sure.
It's getting lit.
That's right. Get wavy. So the
put the candy away. You got any booze?
The percentages are very low. So, you know, the percentage of people who binge drink, which they define as five or more drinks in under 2 hours, on Thanksgiving is just 15% of men and 11% of women. So,
wait, what was it? Five drinks in 2 hours?
In under 2 hours.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's really moving, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
That shows you're serious. you're really excited about Thanksgiving. So if that's your plan for, you know, later this week, just know that you are not alone, but pretty close. Most people don't do that. So tighten it up. Happy Thanksgiving.
God.
All right. Mine too is about Thanksgiving.
Susan.
Good.
But not quite. Good not luck. Quite the same.
I'm sure you probably have something a little sunnier.
I mean, only because Thanksgiving is celebrated in the U.S. and it is a holiday dedicated to gratitude. And I have so much to say about this, so I'm going to be really quick. It is not the only country that celebrates. There are quite a few other, not quite a few, there are other countries that celebrate, including Canada, that it came before the US, Japan, Germany, Grenada, Liberia. I could keep going. But I think what's more interesting is Campbell's did a survey with one poll of 5,000 Americans. Can you guess how many percentage of, I'm very excited. Can you guess how many percentage of people want
Settle
to
down.
Just eat the side dishes and not the turkey?
Oh.
55.
Yeah, 54.
Oh!
Nice.
So close. And how many prefer the side dishes to the turkey?
70%.
Yeah, everyone. 67. Have you guys seen this study?
Maybe. No, but that tracks.
Oh, I love turkey.
I do too. My wife does not, but I love it.
I just love everything about Thanksgiving dinner. Can you guess what overtook? I know.
Susie,
so
do you
sad.
Need a moment?
I just, focus. I mean, it's been a long day.
Lock it.
I need a martini too. Can you guess what the number one side dish is? It overtook stuffing.
Overtook?
Don't say cranberries.
Mashed potatoes, stuffing number
yes.
two, mac and
mashed
cheese
potatoes.
Number three. Mac and cheese number three was not even in the top five for 2022. And the last fact I'm going to leave you with is 6 out of 10 are planning to celebrate Friendsgiving.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Are you part of the four?
No,
sounds like you
Oh, it's Max. Not what we do. I'm hosting this year, so once it's all over, I'm throwing
That's
everybody
it,
out
done.
Of the house.
Yeah. Get it. Oh, you're going to be part of that 15%?
Yes. I mean, I can't say for sure. 5 and 2 hours is a lot.
It's a lot. No, nobody, kids, nobody should be doing that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Adults, too. Nobody
think
should be doing that.
To this podcast. Probably no adults at this point, to be honest. This is a rough segment.
Just
Yuri,
a guy
what
with a bow tie and suspenders reading the Wall Street Journal.
Yuri, help us out, mate.
Well, so I saw an article last week on the fact that there aren't as many bugs being hit on a windshield. So it was everyone road tripping for Thanksgiving. I was thinking, okay, I'd look up what percentage of insects have gone down. And it's actually 45%. There are 45% fewer insects.
I'm just going to say that this is made up. I'm sorry. I don't want to impugn anybody, but
Yuri, if
how do you
didn't
even
do
measure
the
that?
Homework and find any dinner party, just say so, okay? Don't make up a study on the spot.
Wait, what was the story that 45% less bugs end up on windshields?
No. So people have anecdotally said that there are fewer bugs on windshields than there were when they were kids.
Fair.
I looked up a study, and apparently that there are 45% fewer insects globally because of pesticides and global warming. So it's actually kind of a big deal. But as you're driving somewhere warm and you notice you have a clean windshield, that's why.
Oh my God,
that's sad too.
This is a depressing segment. Jesus. Happy Thanksgiving.
When you're having your sixth drink in 2 hours, bring up the bugs, which are all dead, and getting deader.
But those lantern flies are everywhere, so they're surviving.
I think, maybe that's what we should turn this around to, is just how incredibly satisfying it is to kill lantern flies.
Kill them.
And how easy.
Yeah, you're supposed to.
Like a lightning bug?
No, these are special. They're like kind of red and brown
lightning
and
bugs
spotted.
Are beautiful.
No. Yeah, no, those are amazing. No, spotted lantern flies are what they're called. They're an invasive species. They're from Japan.
Canada.
No. but okay, yeah, they're everywhere and they're wretched. And in Philly, they like practically like,
eat your trees.
They do. And but the city officials are like exhorting people to kill them.
You can get fined if you don't kill one.
Is that right?
No.
You see, this is just completely, we've shredded the contract of this podcast, and now we're just going to be lying to each other for the next 30 minutes.
No, we're all over the place. Trying to get to their drink.
All right, I've got one for you real quick. We have to end the episode. Everyone's already left. If you haven't, then I've got one for you real quick. We'll let you get on your way. Which airlines carry the most passengers as of 2022? Any guesses? One guess each.
British Airways.
No.
Ryanair.
Oh, Ryanair was third. That is a good guess. Unlike Susie's, which was terrible.
Air Canada.
I said one guess each. So
Delta.
That is also a good guess, unlike Susie's. Delta was second. Second
United.
Place. Susie, enough. No. Okay. That's not on there. Top three. So let's go up from five. So fifth place, Southwest. Fourth place, United. And then the low-cost European airline from Ireland, Ryanair Group, 168 million people. However, they were ranked...
All of them upset.
third in passengers, possibly third in passengers, and 13th in terms of revenue. Delta were second with 170 million, so just a few more. And then they were actually the recorded the biggest operating profit. And then American, number one, 200 million. They also made the most money.
So wait, what was the question? How many people are they carting around?
Yes, most passengers moved around in 2022. So the US airline companies accounted for four of the top five by passenger numbers. Makes sense. It's one of the most populated countries in the world. The busiest domestic airline route was Atlanta.
New York, Chicago.
No, Atlanta to Orlando.
Oh, that's
somehow
weird.
Just ahead of weird. Vegas to LA, which makes a bit more sense. Yeah. And worldwide full year 2022 traffic was nearly 70% of 2019 pre-pandemic levels, according to the IATA.
It blows my mind that we haven't gotten to the other side of that pre-pandemic threshold. That's crazy to me. Yeah. Is that, maybe this was in the article or wasn't, Mark, is that basically because of China? Like, I feel like all the travel that I know of in the US and Europe, like it feels as chaotic and horrible as it did in 2019.
But yes, that wasn't referenced in this article, but I looked at these numbers up about 6 months ago, or maybe it was last year at this point.
Wait,
and they had mentioned that China
data?
Not traveling as much.
Did
no,
you
this is the latest
data.
I'm just saying that the Jesus.
Marcus checks this number every 3 months. It's very important to him.
Yeah. I don't have a life. Anyway, let's move on to the end of the show. Thank you so much to my guests. Kind of today, it was a rough episode, but we got through it. Thank you so much to Susie.
I hope you have me again.
Probably not. Thank you to Yuri.
Glad to be here.
Sort of. To Max.
That was not true. Yuri,
glad
come on.
To be here.
You had fun. Come
Max,
on.
Max, thank you to you, the winner of the game of the week.
Always a pleasure, Marcus. Thank you, guys.
And in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I want to say how thankful I am that I get to work with Victoria, who edits the show. She does basically everything. She edits the show. She helps produce it. She publishes it. She schedules the episodes. She works with our sponsors and so much more. So huge thank you to her. For Stuart, who runs the team, I'm only medium thankful. I'm also thankful, though, to James, who copy edits it, and Sophie, who runs our social media. I'm definitely thankful for everyone who takes time to listen to the show, takes time out of your lives. We really, really appreciate it. We don't exist without you. We hope that everyone has a terrific Thanksgiving. You can hang out with Sarah Lieber if you like tomorrow for Reimagining Retail, last episode before Thanksgiving. She'll be talking with analysts Blake and Sky about how creators drive people to buy things. We'll hopefully see you guys, though, next Monday for the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer Podcast. Happy long Thanksgiving weekends, American people. Everyone else, you will have to be in on Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving to Canadians from
October.
Monday the 14th of October.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Better late than never.
No, it's early.
What?
Oh, we're earlier.
Yeah.
No, nice but try. He's saying that it's better that I say thank
you.
Better
you
that I say
wished
happy
me
Thanksgiving.
A happy Thanksgiving in October, so don't worry.
It was a month ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember clearly.
Okay. Did you wish me a happy Thanksgiving for being from England? For our Thanksgiving? No, you didn't.
You don't have one, I checked.
Okay, fair enough. We don't, but we could have.